My name is Elizabeth Bancroft. I'm moderating this session. I think we have a really great session on MRSA. We have a really nice diversity of presentations. We're going to change this around just a little bit. We're going to have our first presentation, which is our scientific study of MRSA and the best way to kill those critters. And we'll take questions on that presentation immediately afterwards. After that, we're going to have three very diverse presentations using administrative claims data, looking at rates of MRSA and staph aureus and the trends in those rates over time. Those three presentations, we're actually going to have them go in a row, not take questions in between them. If you have questions specific to the presentation, I encourage you to write them down, because I think there's going to be a lot of overlap in some of the questions that you may have about the use of administrative claims data, and I think we'll have a more robust discussion if we bring up those questions at the end of the presentation, because some of the questions will touch upon each of the presentations, and it'll be a nice sort of compare and contrast. So just to let you know, write down your questions for the last three presentations, because we'll take them all at the end to be able to really facilitate a discussion. So, we're going to start off now, like I said, with our presentation. It is by Sarah Edmonds, who works for GOJO. And she has a very distinguished scientific background. She has both a bachelor's and a master's in biology. She works directly with these critters and how best to kill them, which I find heartening that people are doing that, and that there are, in fact, ways that we can help prevent the spread of MRSA. So please, Ms. Edmonds.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for the introduction. I'd like to disclose that I am employed by a commercial entity, GOJO Industries Incorporated. And first, I'd like to go through some of the learning objectives for today's presentation. I'll be summarizing the CDC hand hygiene recommendations for the prevention and control of MRSA. I'll be listing the four most common antibacterial ingredients that are used in topical antiseptics. And also, you should be able to articulate the reasons that alcohol-based instant hand sanitizers are the best hand hygiene option for MRSA. So first, to give you a little bit of history about MRSA, Staphylococcus aureus has been a human colonizer and pathogen throughout human history, but it wasn't until the 1880s that it was first discovered and named by a Scottish researcher. And Staphylococcus aureus literally means golden cluster seed. And if you look at the picture here in the corner, you can see where he got the idea for that name. In the 1960s, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, MRSA, was initially reported in hospital settings. And it was primarily a hospital-associated pathogen until the late 1990s, when MRSA strains emerged in the community that were distinct from hospital-associated strains. So why should you be worried about MRSA? In the US, about 94,000 people get invasive or really serious MRSA infections each year, which are associated with about 19,000 deaths. 86% of those are healthcare associated, and 14% are community associated. MRSA infections are also estimated to cost US hospitals between $3.2 and $4.2 billion each year. So you can see there's a huge cost both in terms of life and financial costs of this disease. Also, if you've been following the recent headlines, you might be aware that in the past month alone, there have been two high school football players that have died as a result of a community-associated MRSA infection, one in Philadelphia and one in Central Florida. So what are the key differences between community-associated and healthcare-associated MRSA? The at-risk groups for healthcare-associated are those that have recently come into contact with a healthcare environment. For community-associated, the at-risk groups are people that are in close person-to-person contact out in the community, such as prison inmates, team sports participants, the military, and children. Risk factors for healthcare-associated MRSA include colonization. It is known that about 1% of the population is colonized with MRSA in the nose. Indwelling devices such as catheters and antibiotic use are also risk factors. For community-associated, the risk factors are primarily some kind of underlying skin condition or compromised skin, such as an abrasion or cut. The clinical manifestation of healthcare-associated MRSA are wound infections, such as surgical site infections, urinary tract infections, pneumonia, and bacteremia or sepsis. For community-associated, the clinical manifestation is primarily skin and soft tissue infections. Healthcare-associated is typically multi-drug resistant, whereas community-associated MRSA is often sensitive to most traditional antibiotics. And for toxin production, PVL stands for Pantin Valentine Leukocytin. It's a gene that encodes for a cytotoxin that is a clinically significant virulence factor for community-associated MRSA. Healthcare-associated is rarely PVL positive, whereas community-associated is often PVL positive. Proper hand hygiene is key to MRSA prevention. How is MRSA spread? Person-to-person contact and also contact with contaminated surfaces. And there have been many studies that have shown evidence for MRSA prevention with proper hand hygiene, and I've just highlighted a few of these in this presentation. One study showed that implementation of an alcohol and CHG program combined with increased hand hygiene compliance resulted in a 40% reduction in MRSA isolates in an Australian healthcare facility. Another study showed that an increase in hand hygiene compliance from 48% to 66% resulted in a significant decrease in MRSA infection rates. And a third study showed that wards in a French rehabilitation hospital with hand hygiene compliance rates of greater than 70% had lower MRSA rates. So what exactly is proper hand hygiene? The CDC hand hygiene recommendations are if hands are not visibly soiled or after removing any visible material with a non-antimicrobial soap and water, hands should be decontaminated with an alcohol-based hand rub. When hands are visibly soiled, hands should be washed with either a non-antimicrobial soap or an antimicrobial soap and water. So far, what is the evidence for the effectiveness of topical antiseptics against MRSA? There have been a couple of in vitro studies conducted. One showed that solutions of greater than 60% ethanol had complete kill against various clinical strains of methicillin susceptible and methicillin resistant Staph aureus. That same study also showed that products with 10% povidone iodine or 0.5% CHG active ingredients had variable efficacy against clinical strains of methicillin susceptible and methicillin resistant Staph aureus. And another study showed the efficacy of triclosan containing products against MRSA was formulation dependent, meaning that the efficacy was not dependent on the active ingredient level alone, but on the formulation as a whole and how all those ingredients interact. There have also been a few studies looking at the in vivo effectiveness of topical antiseptics actually tested on the hands. And those have shown that alcohol-based hand sanitizers and 70% ethanol are both highly efficacious against MRSA when tested on adult finger pads and are statistically superior to bland soap. Another showed that alcohol-based hand sanitizer, 70% ethanol, and 10% povidone iodine are all more effective than bland soap or a 4% CHG hand wash when tested against MRSA. And a third showed that a well-formulated triclosan hand wash had superior efficacy to a 4% CHG hand wash against methicillin-susceptible and methicillin-resistant Staph aureus when tested using a standard hand wash method. So you can see there have been several studies conducted looking at both the in vivo and in vitro effectiveness of topical antiseptics against MRSA, but there haven't been any studies to date looking directly at comparing community-associated and healthcare-associated strains. So the objective of our study was to determine the antimicrobial efficacy of common topical antiseptic products against healthcare-associated and community-associated MRSA strains. We also wanted to evaluate whether laboratory MRSA strains are appropriate testing surrogates for clinical isolates of healthcare-associated and community-associated MRSA, since typically when evaluating these topical antiseptics, laboratory strains are used. So we tested 14 different commercial hand hygiene products that include a variety of different test article formats and also a variety of different active ingredients that encompass what we think are the four most common antimicrobial active ingredients for topical hand hygiene products. We tested several hand sanitizers, both with foam and gel formats, with 62% to 80% ethanol as the active ingredients. We tested a surgical scrub gel with a 70% ethanol active, an instant hand sanitizing wipe with a 68% ethanol for the active ingredient. We also tested several antimicrobial hand washes with both foam and liquid formats with varying active ingredients, including triclosan, chlorhexidine, which is also known as PCMX, and chlorhexidine gluconate, which is also known as CHG. The test organisms that we used were several community-associated strains, USA 300, USA 400, USA 1000, and USA 1100. Most of these strains are PVL positive, and most are also resistant to beta-lactams and erythromycin. USA 300 is known to be the most common cause of Staphylococcus aureus community-associated skin infections, and this particular strain's also increasingly been associated with healthcare-acquired infections, so the lines are starting to blur as what was typically thought of as a community-associated strain is now causing problems in a healthcare environment. We also tested a couple of healthcare-associated strains, USA 200 and USA 500. Both are PVL negative and multi-drug resistant. We tested a laboratory MRSA strain, ATCC-33591, and a laboratory methicillin susceptible strain, ATCC-6538. The products were tested using a standard time kill procedure where you start with a challenge inoculum of your test organism that contains about 9 logs CFU per mil of the organism. You take 0.1 mil of the inoculum and dilute that into 9.9 mils of your antimicrobial sample or test article. You mix that and you let it expose for a 15-second contact time, and that's diluted immediately then into a neutralizing solution that stops the activity of the active ingredient. That's then serially diluted and plated. The plates are then enumerated and compared to a titer plate to calculate log reductions. So here are the results for all of the products that contain alcohol active ingredients. And as you can see, all of the alcohol products that we tested achieved complete kill against all of the strains that we tested against. And if you see the greater than symbols here, that just indicates that there were no bacteria recovered in the least diluted sample, so the test was at the limit of detection. For the non-alcohol products, there was quite a different story. We saw that there was quite variable efficacy, and there wasn't a single product that achieved complete kill against all of the strains that we tested against. And if you look closely, for this strain, methicillin-susceptible Staph aureus, you have two products with both having a 0.3% triclosan active. One has complete kill, and the other has about a 2-log reduction. So you can see that you have quite different efficacy with the exact same active ingredient. And that's the same story with this PCMX product, where you have a 0.5% PCMX and a 0.6% PCMX product with a 5.41-log reduction and a 1.5-log reduction. So the efficacy really is formulation dependent and not just dependent on the level of the active ingredient in the formulation. And if you look at this first column with the 0.3% triclosan liquid and compare the different strains, you can see that there are quite large differences between strains as well. If you look at the USA 200 strain, there's about a 0.42 log reduction. And the USA 400 strain had a 3.68 log reduction, and it's really quite variable in between that. So depending on what strain you're testing against, you could have quite different results. We then ranked all of the different strains based on their susceptibility to the topical antimicrobials we tested, from least difficult to most difficult. And we found that the laboratory MRSA ATCC-33591 strain that we tested against was about intermediate in the susceptibility. So we concluded that laboratory MRSA had intermediate susceptibility to topical antiseptics, and it does appear to be predictive of clinical strains. Of course, ideally, when you're evaluating hand hygiene products, you really should be testing against multiple strains, particularly for any products with a non-alcohol active ingredient, since we know from this data that depending on what strain you're testing against, you could get quite different results. We also concluded that the CDC hand hygiene recommendations for use of alcohol-based hand sanitizers are supported by this study. All of the alcohol products that we tested against achieved complete kill, greater than 6-log reduction, of all MRSA strains in 15 seconds. The ability of greater than or equal to 60% ethanol products to kill MRSA was not formulation or strain dependent, so you can be confident that if you're using one of these products for the prevention of MRSA, that it will be efficacious. for antimicrobial hand hygiene products that contain non-alcohol active ingredients, the efficacy was quite variable. It was both formulation dependent, meaning that just dependent on the active ingredient level and percentage, that isn't indicative of the efficacy. And it's also strain dependent, so depending on what strain you're testing against, you could get quite different results. So before choosing a non-alcohol hand hygiene product for the prevention of MRSA, you really should be critically evaluating the efficacy data for that product. So the in vitro data in this study is really the first step in evaluating the comparative efficacy of hand hygiene products against MRSA. And further examination of relative hand hygiene product efficacy using in vivo MRSA hand wash testing should be considered as a next step. But of course, putting MRSA on the hands of volunteers presents certain risks and challenges, so that should be a challenging next step. So I'd be happy to take any questions now.
Okay. For years, benzalkaline chloride, about 0.25% was sort of the thing that was out there. Mm-hmm. And studied well enough, just don't even bother to evaluate it anymore.
It's not as commonly used, particularly in hospital environments, due to irritancy issues for leave-on applications. So that's part of the reason that we did not test it. But it is used.
Hospitals would be interested in preventing multiple different spread of multiple
right.
MRSA. And is there some advantage to the other agents with respect to other microorganisms?
No, alcohol really is quite broad spectrum, so you're going to be able to kill all bacteria and envelope viruses with an alcohol-based hand hygiene product, and that's going to be the story for any alcohol product.
Is there any real difference between, your standard realm that every hospital has and the other flavor varieties that you see in other stores that are 60% alcohol?
As long as you have a greater than or equal to 62% ethanol hand sanitizer, it should be effective. Ethanol, it could be to any alcohol, but ethanol is typically thought to be a little more skin friendly. European markets use isopropyl alcohol a lot, so that's also known to be effective. But
How long does MRSA live on surfaces?
I don't know the exact numbers, but it can live for a long period of time.
It can live for more than 7 days mm-hmm. on surfaces.
And it's still contagious?
It's still culturable. That's the best we know. In the studies that have been done, it's still culturable. You can find it, but no one's ever then taken the bug and then put it on somebody to see if it actually causes disease, but it's still culturable.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to speculate on the formulation of foam? Why the foam is so much more efficacious?
I don't know so much that it was, for those particularly, it did look like it was foam versus liquid. I don't know that that's really the case. I think it just turned out that way. I think it's more the formulation as a whole. I think if we tested more products, we might not see that foam versus liquid as the foam being more efficacious. I think it's more all of the ingredients that are in the product and not just what the foaming agents or something like that that's making it more efficacious.
Further speculation on contact time, I said that's the next step forward, is mm-hmm. to check that on people's hands. But would you just guess?
That for the contact time? It's usually you apply a certain volume and then allow it to dry for topical, the alcohol-based hand sanitizers, so you just let it leave on until dry. And for the soaps, it's usually a 30-second wash followed by a rinse, a 30-second rinse is the typical time.
What the mechanism is, and I say it's kind of like, does resistance develop? And I say, no, it's really kind of like burning you destroy it rather than it being a metabolic thing. But for the lay population, it's kind of a difficult concept. Do you have any better way to explain that, what the mechanism is?
That's a tough question, but for alcohol, we do know that it's an immediate effect and there isn't any residual effect, which is why it's really the best product to avoid any resistance. And for the triclosanin-containing products, I think there's definitely been research on both sides, so that's a harder one to answer.
But the alcohol disturbs the lipid membrane, the envelope viruses and the bacteria. And so I think of alcohol as being more like a chemical bomb. chemical physical bomb against the critters than something like a triclosan, which is really going to, you know, just clog up one gear in the mechanism, and as long as the bug can figure out the one gear, you know, change it, then it can develop resistance. So I think of it more as like a chemical attack, and it's harder to develop resistance to a chemical attack. Mm-hmm. The downside, though, of alcohol, as you said, is that it doesn't have residual, so it kills everything that's there, but it doesn't necessarily last, which is why I think why surgeons in hospitals and why or for surgical scrub preps, they'll use DHG, which does have a residual effect, so that, you know, if you're having surgery for more than a couple hours, you want something that still might be there killing the bugs that are slowly growing back, you know, over time under the hot surgical lights, et cetera.
Right, and that is true.
I have one question, since it's moderator's prerogative, I can we're having problems in California here in that a lot of schools do not want to admit alcohol-based products because of perceived safety concerns.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid the kids are going to drink it, the kids are going to force other kids to drink it, all of that. We're actively trying to get the schools to recognize that that shouldn't be an issue, but I'm wondering if your company has done any studies or have dealt with this in other locations to get it into schools and daycares.
Yeah, that's definitely a problem that we come across frequently. So, and we do know that alcohol products are safer on the skin for kids, especially than benzalkonium or benzethonium chloride, which is the typical non-alcohol leave-on product. But we haven't done any specific studies looking at that, but we do have ways to address them getting into the canisters, such as having locked, you know, hand dispensers on the walls, things like that, so that that risk of ingestion is lowered and things like that. But I mean, I guess with kids, you don't know what they're going to do.
Right, and probably in the correctional arena.
Exactly.
The correctional facilities. We're going to, I want to move on because we've got three more active presentations coming up. So we're going to close the question time.